to you, girl.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is February 27th, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Step by Step Approach to the Febrile Infant. And our guest skeptic is none other than PEDS EM superhero, Dr. Anthony Crocco. He's a pediatric emergency physician and is the medical director and division head of the Division of Pediatric Emergency at McMaster Children's Hospital. He's also the creator of Sketchy EBM. Welcome back to the SGEM, Anthony.
Ken, it's great to be back here on location at the London office of the SGEM.
Yes, we're here in London. You came down to show your new son.
Yeah, life has changed in the Crocco household a little bit. So I've got a 3.5-month-old at home and all those wonderful things I thought I would get done on my paternity leave, including working on Sketchy EBM and another blog I thought about. None of that's gotten done. I barely get sleep. I'm just hanging on.
Well, thank you so much in your busy life for taking time out to come visit us in London and do another episode of the SGEM. What case do you have?
So today we're talking about a 25-day-old girl who presents with fever for the last 6 hours. There's no history of congestion, cough, vomiting, diarrhea, shortness of breath, or any other focus of her infection. She looks well on exam, and her vitals are normal except for a rectal temperature of 38.3 Celsius. She is less than 28 days old, and you wonder how much of a workup to do. Should you do a full septic workup? Should you start IV antibiotics? Should you admit her to hospital? What blood and urine tests would you want to do anyways?
Well, fever without source in infants less than 3 months old represents a significant diagnostic dilemma for clinicians. Several criteria have been developed, including the Rochester, Boston, and Philadelphia criteria, to help clinicians stratify the risk of significant bacterial infection.
I've always had a bit of a problem with these different criteria. The Rochester criteria was developed in kids less than 60 days. The Boston criteria, they gave everybody IV antibiotics or IM antibiotics. And the Philadelphia criteria, everybody had to get an LP. All of these things don't always apply to the kids that I'm seeing less than 90 days with fever without source. In addition to that, all of these criteria were developed in an era pre-Prevnar vaccine. And so I'm not really sure, can I use these in the current population of kids that I see in our emergency department?
Well, a new algorithm has been developed by a European group of pediatric emergency physicians called the step-by-step approach. Anthony, can you walk us through the algorithm?
So the step-by-step approach is really 5 specific steps, and if you answer yes to any of these steps, the child needs a full septic workup and needs to be brought in. The first step is looking to see if there's abnormal pediatric assessment triangle or if the child is ill-appearing. If the answer is yes, they're a high-risk patient. The second step is to see if they are less than or equal to 21 days old. If they are, they're a high-risk patient. The third step is to see if there's white cells in the urine. If there is leukocyturia, they're a high-risk patient. The fourth step is to measure the procalcitonin, and if it's elevated above or equal to 0.5, they're a high-risk patient. The last step is to look at the CRP and ANC. If they're elevated, they're considered intermediate risk and they get their workup. If all of these steps are negative, they're considered a low-risk patient, and that's really the only way to be considered low-risk in this algorithm. Everything has to be negative.
Metegi et al. Did a retrospective study of this step-by-step approach back in 2014.
They concluded that a sequential approach to young febrile infants based on clinical and laboratory parameters, including procalcitonin, identifies better patients more suitable for outpatient management.
So Anthony, what's the clinical question?
So today we're asking, in infants 90 days or younger of age with fever without focus, how does the step-by-step approach compare to using the Rochester criteria or using the lab score method in identifying patients at low risk of invasive bacterial infections?
What's the reference?
Today we're looking at Gomez et al., Validation of the Step-by-Step Approach in the Management of Young Febrile Infants, found in Pediatrics, 2016.
And so what population did they have?
They looked at infants 90 days old or younger with fever without source.
And fever without source was defined as a temperature measured at home or in the pediatric emergency department greater than or equal to 38 degrees Celsius in patients with a normal physical examination and no respiratory signs and symptoms or a diarrheal process. Now, they did have some exclusions. They excluded infants if a clear source of fever identified after history and physical examination, no fever on arrival and fever that had only been subjectively assessed by parents, absence of one or more of the mandatory ancillary tests, and refusal of the caregivers or parents to participate. So what's the intervention?
The intervention was the use of the step-by-step approach.
And what did they compare it to?
They compared it to the use of the Rochester criteria and the use of the lab score method.
And how about the outcome?
So they were looking at the performance metrics to identify patients at low risk of IBI, or invasive bacterial infection. Now, it's important to note that in every study looking at this topic, the definition of IBI, invasive bacterial infection, or sometimes they'll use SBI, significant bacterial infection, can be different. In this case, they were defining IBI as positive bacterial infection in the blood or positive bacterial infection in the cerebrospinal fluid. They also looked at non-invasive bacterial infections, such as urine infections. In this case, the metrics that they were looking at were sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, negative predictive value, positive likelihood ratio, and negative likelihood ratio.
So the author's conclusions were, the step-by-step approach revealed a high sensitivity being more accurate than the Rochester criteria and the lab score at identifying children at low risk of IBI, and appears to be a useful tool for the management of the febrile infant in the ED. However, as no perfect tool exists, the step-by-step is not 100% sensitive, and physicians should use caution, especially when assessing infants with very short fever evolution. For this subgroup of patients, we strongly advise for an initial period of close observation and monitoring in the ED, even when all the complementary test values are normal. All right, Anthony, let's go through the quality checklist for clinical decision tools. First question, the study population included or focused on those in the emergency department?
Yes, it did. This was a multi-center study that recruited patients from 11 pediatric emergency departments in Europe.
The patients were representative of those with the problem?
Yes, they were.
All important predictive variables and outcomes were explicitly specified?
Yes, they were.
This is a prospective multi-center study including a broad spectrum of patients and clinicians, a level 2 study?
No. All centers were pediatric emergency departments, and thus generalizability to the care given at non-pediatric emergency department centers must be cautioned.
Clinicians interpreted individual predictor variables and scores, the clinician decision rule, reliably and accurately.
Unknown. Although most of the clinical decision instruments involve objective laboratory data, two criteria, including abnormal pediatric assessment triangle and ill-appearing, are both subjective assessments. There was no discussion around the inter-rater reliability of these two metrics.
This is an impact analysis of a previously validated CDR?
No.
Okay, and for level 1 studies, the impact on clinician behavior and patient-centric outcomes is reported?
Yes.
The follow-up was sufficiently long and complete?
Yes, it was. There was a follow-up at 1 month post-presentation to ensure data capture.
And the final, 9th question, the effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Yes, it was.
All right, let's run through the key results. There were over 2,000 patients included in this study, with 87, or 4%, being diagnosed with an IBI. The median age was 47 days, and 60% were male. Okay, Anthony, what was the key result?
In this study, the step-by-step approach had the lowest prevalence of significant bacterial infections in their low-risk group at 1.1%. This is compared with the Rochester criteria, which had 2.1%, and the lab score method, which had 10.8%.
In terms of identifying IBI defined as a positive blood culture or CSF culture, the step-by-step approach had better diagnostic metrics compared to the Rochester criteria and the lab score, and we'll include a table in the show notes. But let's talk a little nerdy. Overall, this is a well-conducted, prospective, multi-centered study. The step-by-step approach to fever without source in infants 90 days or younger is better than the Rochester criteria and lab score. But we wanted to mention, well, how many things, Anthony?
I don't think it's going to be 4. 6 sounds like it's too many. 5.
Yes, 5.
So the first thing is we wanted to talk about external validity. This study was conducted in 8 Spanish, 2 Italian, and 1 Swiss pediatric emergency department. Thus, we must be cautious when extrapolating the results for our own work environments.
The second thing was the most important metric. The lab score did outperform the Rochester criteria and the step-by-step approach in terms of specificity, positive predictive value, and positive likelihood ratio.
However, with a clinical decision instrument like this for infants with fever without focus, our primary interest is ensuring that we are not sending home infants with significant bacterial infections or invasive or non-invasive bacterial infections. The metrics that are most important include sensitivity, negative predictive value, and negative likelihood ratio.
The LabScore method did very poorly in these metrics, and as such is not a contender for the clinical decision instrument in this circumstance.
The Rochester criteria had better sensitivity, negative predictive value, and negative likelihood ratio compared to the LabScore method, but the best results were seen with the step-by-step approach, where the sensitivity was 92%, negative predictive value 99.3%, and negative likelihood ratio of 0.17.
The third thing was subjective criteria. Most of the criteria used in the step-by-step approach were objective, like we mentioned. Age, leukocyturia, procalcitonin, CRP, ANC.
However, there were some subjective criteria. A well-appearing infant was defined by a normal pediatric assessment triangle.
The PAT, or pediatric assessment triangle, has some subjective components. Additionally, not all of the participating sites systematically used the PAT, and documentation in the medical record was used to determine if the infant was well-appearing.
Our fourth issue is around the use of procalcitonin. The one major limitation with application of this research is the availability of timely procalcitonin measurement.
This test is currently not universally available in a clinically relevant time frame, an essential component of the step-by-step approach. The fifth and final thing we wanted to mention was age and duration of fever.
Ken, this is something the authors commented on in their paper, and I think it's worth discussing a little bit here. Firstly, the step-by-step approach uses 21 days and younger as a cutoff for being high risk. However, of the 7 patients that were missed by the step-by-step approach, 4 were between the ages of 22 and 28 days, which makes me very worried about all infants less than 28 days old, not 21. Secondly, 6 of the 7 patients missed by the step-by-step approach had fever lasting less than 2 hours, suggesting that the biomarkers may not have had time to rise and flag the child as high risk. I worry about children presenting really early in their illness and whether they need a period of observation in the ED or very strict follow-up.
Well, those were the 5 points we wanted to bring up. Now let's comment on the author's conclusions compared to the SGEM's conclusions.
We generally agree with the authors.
And how about a bottom line, Anthony?
So if you have availability of serum procalcitonin measurement in a clinically relevant time frame, the step-by-step approach to fever without source in infants 90 days old or younger is better than using the Rochester criteria or LabScore method, with the caveat that you should be careful with infants between 22 and 28 days old or those who present within 2 hours of fever onset.
All right, how about a case resolution, Anthony?
In this case, since procalcitonin was not available and the child was less than 28 days old, the clinician did a full septic workup, started IV antibiotics, and admitted the child to pediatrics. The infant was sent home 2 days later when the blood, urine, and CSF cultures came back negative. You set up a meeting with the laboratory services at your hospital to discuss getting procalcitonin testing.
So how are you going to apply this clinically, Anthony?
For infants 90 days old or younger, in an environment where procalcitonin testing is readily available, the step-by-step approach to fever without source in this population is currently the best clinical decision instrument. We also suggest caution with infants between the ages of 22 and 28 days old and those with fever less than 2 hours.
So what are you going to tell your patient?
Well, in this case, given the patient is less than 90 days old and my recent experience with a newborn at home, I'm not going to tell my patient a whole lot of anything. I'll be talking to the caregivers, however, and it really is going to depend on whether I have available procalcitonin at my site. What I'll tell the caregivers is we're going to use either the Rochester criteria or the step-by-step approach to help us decide if their child is at high risk of invasive bacterial infection.
Okay, SGEMers, you know that sound means that it's time for the Keener contest. And last week's winner was superstar nurse Brenda Palsa from South Huron Hospital in Exeter, Ontario. She knew that malaria was the number one cause of death among laborers constructing the Rideau Canal in Ottawa. Anthony, do you have a question for this week?
It's a hard one, Ken. The question is, procalcitonin is the precursor to which hormone?
Oh, that's just too easy. Well, if you know the answer, then send it to the SGEM at gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there is some more FOMED information around procalcitonin and the step-by-step approach, and I'll include those in the show notes. Anthony, thanks again for coming back on the SGEM. But the question on everyone's mind is, when are you going to do another Ranthony?
Oh, I've got one in the works, and I know I said that probably 3.5 months ago, which I haven't worked on that much, but I do have a good one, and let me tell you, you won't like me when I'm hangry.
Oh, when you're hangry.
Exactly.
All right, well, can you give the SGEM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.